gente, welcome to another episode of El ADN Podcast, where every week we sit down with the movers and shakers of our culture for an honest and intimate conversation about their career journey, including all the challenges and failures they've overcome to reach their current success. I'm your host, Victoria Leandra. Shante Cosme is a digital media executive with more than 10 years of expertise building and growing major editorial brands. Before joining Mike as their editor-in-chief, Shante worked her way up at Complex, from contributing writer to executive director. The NYU professor also developed the curriculum for a new long-form writing seminar that aims to help young journalists develop critical reporting skills to support more equitable storytelling in the media industry.
Thank you for that awesome intro. Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. And thank you for chasing me down to be on this. I know it's been a hectic few months, but it's been awesome to watch you shining from afar. I've listened to all of them and I really feel like you're just shining a light as you always do, which I love
to see. Thank you. Thank you. In your Instagram bio, you have something that I love, and it's that you're not a half stepper. Tell me more about what that means.
Well, that's an old hip hop lyric. Don't half step because I'm not a half stepper. Tribe Called Quest. But yeah, I think that for me, that just means that I do everything wholeheartedly. I'm never just like, you know, wishy-washy about something or ambivalent. And it just speaks to just how passionate I am and just the way that I approach my project in my life.
I think before we even met, I think one thing that I admire, at least from afar, was the fact that you rose the corporate ladder. Before joining Mike, you were at Complex and you went from being a contributing writer to an executive editor. And I think that's, you know, years in the making. So tell me a little bit more about what you did differently that allowed you to have that exponential growth within one specific brand or media outlet.
Yeah, I think honestly, I used to see this as a fault, but I started my career in media pretty late, actually. So I graduated with an English degree. I knew I wanted to be a writer, but I think I was just kind of, I don't know, like had some limiting beliefs around whether or not I could actually pull it off. And when I finally got over those, I was 26 and I was like, okay, I'm ready to be a writer. What do I need to do now? So I moved to New York City, obviously, as one does. And I started to try to pursue writing and I was, you know, applying to all these internships. And well, I was applying for jobs at first, but you know how it is with the media in particular, it's kind of this weird leap between having writing experience and studying writing and actually doing it. So I ended up taking a post-grad internship at Complex at 26 years old, which was, you know, really humbling. I think I was honestly working like 9 to 5, 5 days a week in an unpaid internship. But I thought that it was, you know, worthwhile because I really wanted the experience and I was really hungry to prove myself. Yeah. So I ended up getting hired as a paid writer after about 6 months there. And then ultimately a year later was hired as an editorial assistant. But I really do think that hunger played a really big part in kind of how quickly I rose at Complex. I also think, like, you know, very early on, I realized that I really do like managing people. Like it's something that I genuinely love doing. Like I love writing, but, you know, these days I do so much less writing and I do so much more just, you know, like leadership in general and all that entails, you know, and digital media and thinking about how readers consume content and also just managing writers and managing editors and making sure that I'm bringing out the best in them. And I think that that was something that Complex definitely saw in me early on was my ability to be a leader.
I didn't know that about your story, that you started late. And I think that's such a good thing to highlight because oftentimes I get a lot of emails or DMs from aspiring journalists and they think that they're too late already in the game. A lot of people would have not taken that risk of an unpaid internship because they would have thought it's too late. So I think it's interesting when you say you had limiting beliefs. Walk me through some of those and how you worked those out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is something that I still struggle with. Like I have anxiety and it comes up sometimes, these kinds of narratives that I tell about myself to myself. That I have to work really hard to deconstruct and like eradicate, honestly. I remember, you know, in my early 30s, this is after I had been, you know, pretty successful at Complex. And I realized that some of these beliefs were actually still having a tremendous impact in what I was willing to try So I remember one time I wrote in my journal and I actually listed all of the limiting beliefs that I had about myself, you know, and one of them was just, I am just too old. I'm too old to do this. Like I'm not, another one was like, I'm not a great writer. Like, you know, just crazy things about myself that were just categorically untrue. So I think like now I work very diligently to identify those things when they crop up and to create a new narrative for myself that is empowering and that allows me to embrace things without fear of failure. Not that I never fail, but that I'm, you know, I'm never going to let trying and giving something my all. Confidence is very core to how I operate as a leader and just as a human being, and something I try to infuse in other people because I think it is the bedrock of success.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think oftentimes we have these limiting beliefs and we don't share them with the world. For myself, I completely resonate with what you're saying. And I've actually started therapy just to unpack some of those things. Because a lot of times it's not something that we were told, it's ourselves. I'm sure no one told you you weren't a good writer. It's just something that out of the blue, you thought maybe because you compared yourself with some other people, or maybe you were comparing your journey to their journey. So it's something, it's very interesting. And one thing that I loved that you said is write down the limiting beliefs that you have. And I have never heard of this before, and I haven't thought about doing that myself, but I think that's a very interesting and a helpful tactic or tool that we can use to go forward.
I think there's something really jarring about seeing something like that on paper, that you just feel how deeply untrue it is when you write it down. You're like, oh, that is not right. That doesn't fit here. There's no room for that here. And it's just, you know, not a great way of talking to yourself or thinking, you know. It's, and when we say limiting, it's like both limiting in our idea of ourselves, but also limiting in how we move through the world and what we're going to fearlessly take on. And if you don't have those things and they go uninterrogated, I think that they can cause like a lot of ruckus.
I have two things that I think would contribute to the conversation. One is that I am reading a book right now. It's called Think and Grow Rich. And the book talks about the fact that we become our thoughts. So whatever you think of yourself, that's in a way what you're going to become. So we have to start changing the narrative that we have about ourselves. That's one. And then two, actually another guest of the podcast, Serena Kerrigan, she mentioned this and she said, if you wouldn't say that to your best friend, why are you saying it about yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that I was going to say that too. That's so funny. We're just really hard on ourselves. And that just, it really seeped into your life in really insidious ways if it goes unchecked. And that's why therapy is so amazing.
Going back to your corporate background, you're now leading Mike and you just led like a whole revamp of the brand, and you create brands, right? Or you build a brand and you are the image of the brand. And yet similarly, we also are the creators of our own brand, the creators of our own image. So can you walk me a little bit through the process of creating Mike, or not necessarily creating, but revamping it and making it the cool brand that it is today?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I took Mike on, it had just been bought by Bustle Digital Group. And it was definitely just an inflection point. It'd been almost 10 years since the brand had existed. And I had been a huge fan of the brand. I thought that they were doing really smart stuff in you know, the way that they approach politics and made it really accessible for young people. But also we were in a different time. You know, it was thankfully post-Trump. So I think there was a little bit of like a return to joy, a little bit of levity. There was also just to me like an opportunity to kind of reframe Mike for a new generation. There's all these focus on like millennial brands, Gen Z brands. But I think, you know, in my mind, brands should really just be focused on young people, period. And I really wanted to make sure that Mike really wasn't focusing on, you know, what necessarily what age group you're in, but the type of person you are. And for me, the Mike reader, in my mind, is someone who is deeply empathetic, who cares about the world, who's culturally entrenched. I say almost like culture with a socially conscious twist, you know, and I think that that's very much how young people operate now.
Everyone has a different entry point to media, right? So the story of how you entered media is very different than how I entered media. A big question that I get, and I think you would be amazing to answer this, is how to get into media. Like, how can a big name brands such as Mike identify new talent? And I think that's something that has been changing for the past few years. Can you walk me through a few ways in which you find talent and especially talent of color?
Yeah. I mean, I think mentorship is a really big, it's incredibly important to me. And I put a lot of time and effort into that, like paying it forward. So, and I think that a lot of like, I mean, I know that you're the same way, that you deeply care about that. So, you know, I think that it's really important to identify a mentor if you can, someone who you admire, whose approach resonates with you. And I think people will be surprised to learn that people are more than willing to do that. But I also think it's just writing any way you can. Like you can, the beautiful thing about social media and even just thinking about like Substacks and all is that you can create your own platform. You don't need to wait for a brand to give you a platform. So yeah, we take shots on Greenwriters all the time. And I would say that if they can point me to blogs that show that they have expertise in this and they've been doing the work and they're great writers, you know, you don't need to have a platform to do that. Yeah. And I think also building a brand is important. It's something that I definitely struggle with. I think I was talking to you about this last time we met up, but, you know, but honestly, just it's really just about putting your voice out there, you know, and just not being scared to kind of beat that drum on the topics that you care about, because ultimately that can establish you as an expertise. Yeah. And I also just think it's just being deeply persistent, because being a writer or an editor just comes with so many no's, and you have to kind of thicken your skin to then say, okay, I'm going to get a no, but I know. And that's again, like getting right with yourself and being like, I know the talent that I bring to the world. I know what my gift is, and I'm going to be persistent in the pursuit of my success, and just trying to surround yourself with people who can keep pointing you in that direction and keep affirming you and encouraging you.
Going back to your beginning story, I know that your dream school was NYU, and now you're sort of returning to the space as a professor. So tell me a little bit about that full circle moment for you in your life, in your career, and what it has meant to you.
So yeah, when I was younger, NYU was always my dream school, and I did not think I had a shot to get in. It was really more of like a reach school. Lo and behold, I did get that letter in the mail, and I was, you're accepted. Wow. Okay. Then my family's like, yes, how are we going to pay for this? So that's always a question. And, you know, I really grappled with that decision of whether I should go or not. I had got a partial scholarship, and I also had a full scholarship from a state school, Stony Brook. You know, my family was like, we really can't afford to, you know, sign these loans for you. You would have to kind of take on the debt yourself. And I made the decision that, you know, it wasn't really in my best financial interest to do that. I graduated with no debt, which is fantastic. Definitely allowed me to make choices like having a free, working for free in an internship at 26 years old, you know? And, you know, I have no regrets about that, but for a while I was just grappling with it. And I was just remorseful that I didn't get to have that experience. Fast forward to this May, I was offered to, be an adjunct professor at NYU Journalism, and I was able to create my own course. It's all about identity in journalism and kind of diversifying the narrative, and also leaning into the power that you have, that your identity imbues you with, you know, and that it's a gift and not, you know, it's something that you can ultimately use to your advantage as a journalist, and something that you should obviously be thinking about a lot as you tell stories. So yeah, it was a very emotional moment for me. I remember I got my NYU email address, and I was just bawling. I was just felt so overwhelmed with how life worked out so well. I'm super grateful to have the opportunity to do that. And also just be teaching about something that I feel so deeply about. I have the best students. And it's just been such a eye-opening experience. Again, like, you know, young people have just like hunger. And I feel like, you know, in teaching, it has kind of renewed my own hunger and my excitement about this industry and what, you know, what we are capable of when we use our voices in the right way and for the right things.
One important thing about careers that I think is fair is the fact that a lot of what happens in our career path has to do with the opportunities that we say yes and the opportunities that we say no to. So knowing what to put into your plate is what ultimately is going to land you to the next step of where you want to be. Tell me more about how you discern one opportunity from the other and how you choose them.
Yeah, this is a really great question. And I think it's a great question because it is something that I only probably in the last year have got a really firm grasp on. I think that in the past, I struggled with making decisions because I wasn't really sure of the why. Like, why am I doing this? What is my mission? It's not just about success. It's not just about climbing the corporate ladder, because it can be very easy to focus on those kinds of external factors, right? What is my why? And I feel like in the last, you know, year or two, I got very, very clear on that. And it has nothing to do with monetary success and everything to do with, you know, the type of impact that I want to make on the world at large. And I think that when you get clear on that, that's when opportunities become very clearly, this is for me, this is not for me. So for me, it was very much like, okay, this, my mission in this world is that I really want to make space for people like me. I want to make space for women of color, for marginalized people generally. But also that I want to make an impact on the people that I touch. At this point in my career, you know, I know that I care about culture and identity, and I care about like social justice. And these are the three touch points for me. And any job that I'm going to take on is going to have an element where I can do something in that space and you know, move the needle on those things. And if it doesn't have all of those things, or, you know, it doesn't have at least one of those things, it's not the right opportunity for me. And I think that even in thinking, you know, what I want to do in the future, that it becomes really easy to assess things like that when you have a clear sense of what you're trying to accomplish and why mm-hmm. you're trying to accomplish that, you know, not just accomplishing for accomplishing's sake. That's just like a meaningless pursuit unless it's attached to a mission.
Especially in New York. I feel like in New York, everyone is always achieving something, and we can get lost in the achieving process of things.
You touched on something really important there too, that I have also figured out. As much as obviously, you know, if you're working for a company, like, you really have to think what, you know, they have their objectives and you have yours. And for me, any company that I work at, I'm going to say, well, how can I achieve my objectives here? Not, you know, getting lost in just achieving for a company. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's a really important distinction for anybody who works somewhere to make, like, you know, what am I getting out of this? How is this forwarding my goals? Not mm-hmm. just the company's goals, which are separate, right? I mean, exactly. Obviously they dovetail in some ways, but, you know, you have to be really clear on that. Otherwise you can get lost in the sauce.
When you need career advice, when you need sort of like a reminder of where you're headed, or even some people have life coaches, some people have other mentors, who do you go to for advice? I feel like a lot of times our mentors are the people who give advice to us, but then who gives advice to them, right? Like who supports the mentors?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I have one. I'm part of this women's executive network called Chief. And I have this really great group of women who are all, you know, really successful and smart and from different industries, who I'm lucky enough to have a monthly coaching session with. And we kind of lean on each other to give career guidance and things like that, which has been tremendously helpful. It's so great to have like almost like a board of advisors, essentially. And I think I have created that in my life as well. Just people, I'm not friends, honestly, like I don't have a ton of friends who do exactly what I do. But I don't think that that's important, and not as important as just having people whose acumen you trust, whose intentions you trust. So I definitely have kind of cobbled together a board of advisors that are like my people who I go to when I'm struggling with something. But also to keep it 100, I definitely feel like as much advice as I can glean from one person or another, I ultimately already know the answers. I think that gut intuition plays a huge role in how I make decisions. So when I'm really stuck on something, I tend to kind of retreat into myself and try to like kind of quiet the noise and go for like lots of long walks and just really kind of get back in touch with that inner voice that already knows the answer that maybe I'm just not listening to because there's just, you know, too much happening. One thing that I've had some success with is visualizations. So just really kind of shutting your eyes and closing out the world and imagining yourself, this future version of yourself, you know, the highest possible version of yourself and what they look like and what they feel like. And I think those exercises can be kind of crazy in how inspiring they are, because you realize that this future far off self who has all of the things that you want and dream of, they're already there. Like, you're already that person. You're already have all of the gifts and every, you know, obviously you're becoming more of an expert in certain things and you're building knowledge in certain things. But like, in terms of like the power and capacity that you have for greatness, it is already there. It's in you and it's been there all along. And I think sometimes when you envision these kinds of things, you realize that you already are that person who can have those things, and that it's almost like inevitable. Like, what's for us is for us, you know? It's, you just have to be yourself. And I think that that's something I think about a lot too, that I have focused a ton on, is that like being aggressively authentic. Like, I'm going to hit you with everything I am, and maybe you're not going to like some of that, but I know who I am and I know what I have to offer. And I'm confident that when I'm coming from a place of truth, that the right people are going to be around me. I'm going to be surrounded by people who I feel seen by, and who I make feel seen. And I think that that's when the magic happens. It's when you're stop fighting against the tide and you're like, you know what? These things that are going to happen for me, I'm attracting all the right people at the right time and the right opportunities. And that's why I think it goes back to that gut thing we were saying. That you feel right, like here.
Yeah.
And I think you do know.
Mm-hmm. I know that, like myself, you experience and you deal with imposter syndrome. And I feel like that's something that has to do with being Latinas in the US. That must be, because a lot of us deal with this. But I know that you have this affirmation that it's, I am expansive. And I want you to sort of like unpack that for us a little bit. What does it mean, and how can we channel that into our daily lives?
Yeah, I think it goes back to kind of what we were saying, right? That there are these limited beliefs. And I think they crop up in sort of strange ways. So I want to remind myself that I'm capable of everything that I put my mind to. I have all the tools and all the gifts available to solve this problem, to achieve my dreams, and it's all here. So sometimes I just have to tune into that power that we all have. You know, you have it, I have it. We have a tremendous amount of power. And I think that day-to-day life can sometimes chip away at that. But I think like retuning back into yourself and reminding yourself of just how much power you have over your life, over the people you surround yourself with, your circumstances, and you're really leaning into that fullest, most expansive version of yourself. That's the version of yourself that gets it all done and is unstoppable. And I truly feel like everyone has that person inside of them. They just have to tune in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Is there something that you haven't done that you want to do in the future?
I think one thing that has always made me nervous is public speaking. I have really struggled with kind of, you know, obviously I'm great at articulating myself on paper, but I feel like sometimes when I'm trying to express myself, you know, in a speaking scenario, that I don't always come across, you know, that I'm not always able to articulate my ideas as well as I would like. So I've been really leaning into saying yes to things like this, or, you know, any kinds of like video opportunities. Because I think that one thing I would love to do is like at some point in the future, be a journalist on air.
This is what I tell myself. It's not a matter of if, but a matter of when.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah. It's happening. That's awesome. If you could tell your future self one thing, what would that be?
I mean, like I said, I kind of talk to my future self a lot, and I think it's just be bold and unapologetic, to continue just leaning into exactly who I am and knowing the gifts that I have, and, you know, not thinking about whether I'm enough for anybody else, but, you know, being really secure in the sense that, you know, I was put here to be exactly who I am. And I think that that's when we are at our best, is when we are just fully settled into the human beings that we are. And I feel like, you know, that's obviously a process, but I feel really in it. And I think when I'm in it, that's when the good things happen.
Beyond your work, how do you want to be remembered?
Beyond my work. Oh, just for being, you know, incredibly generous and kind with my energy. Friendships are really important to me. I think I invest a lot of energy in just helping people be the fullest version of themselves, reach their potential, and just creating like a safe space and a place for people to be seen. And I think that's the stuff that people are going to talk about at my funeral, not my work. It's going to be, how did Shantae make me feel? How did it feel to be in her energy? And, you know, how did it feel to be loved by her? And I really, you know, that's my highest hope, is just that people feel really loved and supported and cared for by me. And that's all that matters, really.
That's beautiful. Bueno, Chante, thank you so much for being here.
It was so great to chat with you. You're always just such a ray of light.
Here are my top takeaways from our conversation. Number one, in order to be successful, we have to part ways with the limiting beliefs that set us back from acting and actually reaching our goals. Number two, identify your why. Beyond the money and titles, find the true purpose behind why you do or want certain things. And number three, people may forget what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel. Thank you so much for listening. Gracias, mi gente. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave us a review. That's so helpful and exciting to us. If you learned something from this episode, share it with a friend. I'm sure they'll enjoy it as well. We drop new episodes every single Monday morning, but you can always find us on Instagram at El ADN Podcast. And before you leave, we want to hear your takeaways from today's guest. Share with us via Instagram stories, and don't forget to tag El ADN Podcast and Victoria Leandra for a regram. See you next week. Hasta la próxima, familia.